Katie.
I'm Erica.
And this is Book Talk. Welcome to Book Talk.
Book Talk is a weekly podcast where we read a section of a book each week and we talk about it. It's your antisocial book club. This week we're reading the second section of Luisa Luna's Two Girls Down. And we're just going to start with a quick recap of chapters 4, 5, and 6, which is what we read this week. In chapter 4, throughout this, basically we have Cap and Vega are now teamed up. So they're like a detective team who are doing most of the interrogating, investigating together. In chapter 4, we have them teaming up. They receive a video from the hacker, which shows what happens when right before the girls are taken, which we find out the girls are smiling and walking towards someone, so we think it's someone that they might know. So they go back to Jamie to ask who else it could be, and she suggests maybe her ex, who is Alex Chaney. In the next chapter, Alice and Vega go to Chaney's house that like late that night and have their first experience of interacting and interrogating someone together. They, through that process, find out that Chaney had seen Kylie recently. She had been there. They also find out this important clue that Kylie kept a journal and was in a secret club with her friend. And then they have some like dialogue about how to best interrogate and have different perspectives on how to get information out of their sources. Then in the final chapter in this section, we have two different interrogation scenes, one with Marianne Marsh, who is the mother of a missing son. In a cryptic email, Vega gets told to investigate the Marsh disappearance. Then we have a scene with Cole, Lindsay, and Press, which is a family. Cole was friends with Kylie, and she knows where the journal is, and then they have to negotiate to get the journal out of the house.
Perfect. So how are you feeling about the book so far?
Okay, I'm stressed about this book.
We picked this book to be non-stressful, so we wouldn't have to discuss like really deep and important things with these extremely stressful weeks before the election, and here you are stressed anyways.
I think I'm stressed because I'm not sure what I'm supposed to be getting out of this book at this point. You know, obviously, like, I know that you guys are all listening to this podcast and I want you to have a really good experience with the book. And at this point, I'm kind of confused about, like, what is the point of this story?
It's a thriller.
Right. It's reading as, like, it's super engaging. I mean, it's fun to read, but I don't know, like, yet. And maybe it will be revealed and I'm being, like, I'm jumping to conclusions here, but I don't really see, like, a core message in this. Like, who is good? Who is bad? What is this telling us about ourselves? And this is sort of, I guess, why, you know, gets to the heart of like, why do we read books? What are books for? And I agree that books can just be for like pure entertainment, but I guess that's all I'm getting out of the book so far. I'd be really curious to hear what you think, Katie.
Well, I think that thrillers specifically, you don't get a lot of that meaning until the very end. Like, I think they are a story and they're entertainment and you're listening to the whole story. And then once you're done learning and listening to the story and you have all the clues, you can like find the deeper meaning in it. But I think the point of a thriller is that you don't have that in the beginning. Whereas when you read more of a novel, like Red at the Bone, each chapter kind of has like a nugget you're supposed to get from it, because it's more of like an Iliad or a like an epic about something. Then this is like a story. They're not going to tell you everything you're supposed to know now, because that would ruin the fun of like reading a thriller. I think you read a lot of books, though, that you – and I could be wrong about this, but I feel like you read a lot of books that you're going to learn or grow or find something in throughout the process of reading it. And I think this might be a little bit different, where you have to like – this would be a book that I would devour in a day or two normally, though. So I think stretching it out is interesting as well.
Yeah, The other thing that is bothering me, and I know I'm like just a huge snob about this, I'm so sorry.
Is this about the tea?
This is about the tea. There are things that I find really irritating and almost like poor writing in books that just drive me crazy. Like the fact that Vega drinks hot tea, not coffee, is just the kind of stupid, meaningless character trait that we are given when the character is obviously made up and not real, and someone's sitting in front of like a dry erase board being like, who is Vega?
Oh my God, you are in a mood today.
It's like, of course she just drinks hot tea. And like, they bring it up again and again and again. And it's this one small thing that's supposed to convince you that this is a real person, but it comes across as such, so heavy-handed. Also, like, people drink a lot of different things. It's not like, do you want coffee or hot tea? It's always hot tea with her.
Well, okay. It's always oat milk latte with you. I mean, who are you really?
That is true. But I just, it's one of those, it's also, again, this goes back to what we talked about last week with Vega and Cap, of this, like, inevitable romance that is honestly just, to me, it comes across as lazy. Like, of course, oh, male character A, female character B, they're gonna, like, something's gonna happen between them. And it's just like, oh, it's so obvious.
I hope this book surprises you.
I hope so, too.
I hope she drinks coffee and is just like, Cap is my friend. Bye.
All right, moving on from my petty grievances. What is your current theory about what happened with the girls?
Okay, my current theory is obviously it's somebody that Kylie knows that the younger one does not really know or feel comfortable with, but she obviously feels an allegiance to her sister, so she's going to follow her. I think there's something, and this could be reading too far into it, but I feel like there's something with the fact that she doesn't have a solid father figure and went to Alex Chaney's house to, like, see him or whatever because she wanted a father figure back in her life, which makes me think there could be some connection with some older man, whether it's someone that she met online. Like, is this book written in current times? Because I feel like, is this somebody she met online that she shouldn't be talking to? Someone who reached out to her to get something from her mom? I don't know. I feel like it's somebody that Kylie knows that her sister doesn't. Maybe not our most obvious suspect at this point. So I don't know. I'm a little bit worried about that. But I feel like I'm worried about Kylie.
I don't know. I do have one prediction, which is I think that the fate of the girls is going to be different. I think whoever has them is going to split up the girls and keep Kylie and either let Bailey go or Bailey's going to get killed. Something
at the end?
That's no. I think this is going to be before the end. I think the girls are going to get separated because I think there's a reason there's two of them. They're also different in age and different in temperament. And I think we're going to see their stories splitting. And then potentially once the stories split, we might get more information from Bailey's perspective. That's my hypothesis.
Okay, I want to talk about Vega and kind of how it fits into the Marianne Marsh part. So I think it's very interesting that Vega is obviously a highly intuitive person. And we kind of are learning that throughout the book. But usually highly intuitive people are also very emotionally connected to others. So I think it is a very interesting point that she is not at all emotionally connected to people, probably on purpose, but that she has to kind of like force herself to play that part. I also feel like that is in contrast to when she's talking to Marianne Marsh and she has this like visceral physical reaction to her discussion of grief. And so I feel like something happened. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Okay, I have two thoughts about this. The first is one of my collaborators and a professor at Columbia, Adam Galinsky, who will love that he's on the podcast. He works with the difference between perspective taking and empathy. And empathy is when, like, I feel what you're feeling. It's like when someone is grieving, you feel it. Or like for me, like I can't watch a TV commercial of someone crying without crying. Like, it can be, like, a 30-second ad for a Ford Focus, and, like, I'm crying.
No.
So I'm high on empathy, but...
Okay, so am I, and I never cry. That's so funny.
Oh, you can have some of my tears. They're very dramatic. But the other side, which I think is what Vega has, is perspective taking. And this is less of the emotional side and more of, like, the cognitive side of, like, I can put myself in your shoes and understand what you're thinking. And I think she's much more... she's higher on perspective taking. Like, she can put herself into their minds and see how they're reading the situation, what they want out of the situation, and also like the lay of the land from their perspective. And that's what gives her such strong insights. Now, to the second point, we talked about last week, like, I alluded to her potentially having, like, sociopathic tendencies. What we learn in the Marianne Marsh interaction is that's not the case. So she definitely right. has, like, some emotions that get stirred up, possibly from, like, a parent of hers who had health issues, or a sibling that had health issues. But clearly she's, like, emotionally triggered in that moment, and feels a lot for Marianne and wants to help her. We also, in the last episode, talked about the interpersonal relationships that we're seeing emerge. Obviously, like, between Cap and Vega, but also now with all these new characters that we're meeting. I mentioned that I don't like it, but we are starting to see Cap, like, pay attention to Vega in very specific ways. Like, he's, like, leaning close to her as they're taking pictures of the journal, and he's, like, talks about how good she smells, and then he just wants to, like, turn and smell her.
Which, oh, God, it sounds so creepy when you say it, but...
It wasn't as creepy when we like read that. It.
Okay, I feel like it's more like, you know, the Friends episode. You don't, like, watch Friends as much as I do, but there's a Friends episode where, like, Ross hugs Rachel, and he, like, just takes, like, a giant sniff of her hair. It sounds so creepy now. But he loves her. And he's like, coconuts, yum. Anyways.
That's exactly how I imagine Jennifer Aniston smells, like coconuts.
Same. I don't know if that's what it says in the show, but that is, like, also tropical, how I imagine her smelling.
Like, breezy, pina colada, warm.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
That's interesting. that we've both thought about how she smells. Okay. I do think there are some early sparks. I don't know if I feel like it would be very predictable if they end up together. So I'm interested to see if this author agrees and is maybe leading you down that path so she can be like, just kidding, this isn't predictable. Or if it's just going to be, then they fall in love and solve mysteries together forever. Don't love that.
I bet they're going to, like, hook up. Vega's going to say, let's never talk about it again. And then Vega's going to disappear at the end.
Oh, that sounds like what's going to happen. That feels more predictable. Predictable, but more interesting than them just solving mysteries forever and ever in this small town that Vega hates. Like, she has a house in LA. I don't know. How are you feeling reading that scene when they go to Cole's house to ask her about the secret club? What were you feeling about that scene with Mr. and Mrs. Linsome?
I mean, right off the bat, if someone has, like, a 10-year-old and their entire house is all white, these people are psychos. Like, that is so weird. Like, and the way they described it with, like, there was, like, a glass figurine.
Kids do not live here.
And a grand piano. It's like, where are the kids? Like, that's just, like, the opposite of anyone whose, like, house I've been to with children, with young children. So I think that was an early clue that something was not quite right. And then when press comes home, so it's kind of like we think, oh, this is going so well. They found the journal super easy. Everybody's happy. Lindsay gave them access to Cole pretty easily. And Cole seems to, like, have a good relationship with Kylie. And then press comes home. And I think this was a really well-written section of this chapter where you see both the effects that Lindsay feels when her husband comes home, and then immediately how Vega and Cap notice and start to adjust, and they're being, like, really tactical about how do we convince press to let us do this. Cap is, like, recalling all the times he's, like, experienced this, like, macho guy energy. We have him, like, recognizing that press has some, like, anti-Semitism. There's, like, so much that happens in such a short amount of time.
Right. That interaction could not have been longer than a couple of minutes, and you're getting so much out of it. I do think the perfect house is maybe that glass facade can be easily shattered. Like, it's this perfect place. Everything is perfect. We're a very happy family. And it's obviously an illusion, which is their relationship is scary. I feel like what Vega does is very interesting. Like, it's kind of hard to read. I feel like I would have gotten more feelings about it if I'd watched it. But I feel like she's kind of playing this, like, innocent, dumb, like, airy girl. Is that what you got from it when she's talking to Mr. Linsome and trying to convince him to let them leave with the journal?
Yeah, she definitely wants to come across as she wants press to underestimate her,
right, which he easily does.
Yes, by acting, like, a little bumbling, forgetful, like, childish, like playing up that she like is young looking. And then also she's trying to have press relate to Cap as these really smart men who are dealing with these like incompetent women, with the way she like drops the phone and says like, yell at me. Because like she knows they're watching. It's like she wants press to have the impression that like Cap is like me, Vega I can ignore.
But he does not think Cap is like him. I mean, he wants to put some distance between that too. But I see what you're saying. Like Vega wants him to see the parallels there, so he's not threatened, and he thinks that this is just some people trying to play cop who are then gonna give it over to the cops, which they're gonna do. So they're not even gonna put Mr. Linsome in a situation to come back after them. They're like, sure, we'll read the journal, take pictures, and drop it off at the police station ourselves. Like, we'll do what you say, but only because we're really the ones in control and you're not.
Right. It's funny too, because again, like press is so focused on Cap and intimidating him, which is funny because Vega's the one who's like holding the metal clip that she could have like physically assaulted him with. So she is the threat. She's the one who's actually thinking about that. I mean, Cap is like getting in his face a little bit, but she's the one who's like, okay, if this goes down, I can like get his jugular. Like, she's not playing around.
Cap is way more in his own head, though. I feel like he's not as able to separate that because he's got a lot of baggage with this guy, what people in the town think of him because of that situation with M. Like, I feel like he's mad at this guy, but he's not thinking like, Vega and I need to get out of here. He's thinking like, I fucking hate this guy. Like,
this is an explicit episode. Yes, I will.
I don't know. Can you bleep that? Just bleep it.
No, it's funny. It's funny. I don't think it changes who listens.
I mean, your mom might yell at me. I don't know.
Sorry, Mama Bailey.
I'm sorry. Anyways, I feel like he's just like mad. He's not really like thinking four steps ahead the same way Vega is.
Right, but Vega's using that to her advantage. Like,
oh, absolutely.
She knows that Press is threatened by Cap. Press is not even paying attention to her.
Right.
And so that gives her the upper hand because she's the one he actually should be scared of. I mean, Cap would maybe punch him, but he would just hit him right back. But Vega's the one who's like, I have a weapon.
Erica, what are we reading next week? I can't wait to keep reading.
We are reading chapters 7, 8, and 9. Can't wait. I'm excited. I can't wait to see what happens.
It's gonna Me neither.
I'm sure we'll learn so much more in the next couple chapters.
Okay, let's do talk, talk.
Talk, talk.
Talk, talk.
Katie, how was your week?
It was lovely. I feel like I'm trying to think what happened over the last week. Last weekend was great. Jake and I took a lot of long walks with all of our friends. We walked 8 miles on Saturday with like different people outside. I know.
That's so fun.
And I feel like this week has been a lot of just like hanging with my little quarantine pod of people. And Jaren Levi and Jason and I played the new game Pandemic, which is literally about the pandemic.
They you are have so to fast.
I know. You have to work with your team, the four of you. Each of you is like a different thing, like a researcher, a dispatcher, a medic. We lost all four times, which felt very 2020.
That sounds so fun. I also love last week we talked about code names.
Oh, yeah. Like, I love
We code started names. Playing this new game called Code Names. I'm like, Code Names is so old.
I do think it came out like 20 years ago. Whatever.
Yeah, it's super old, but it's a great
game. Well, it's new to me, and that's what matters. And I also loved that game. I'm bringing it to my parents' house tomorrow night and they've never played either. That is, I will say, my favorite part of COVID is we started doing like an actual family dinner once a week in a very Gilmore Girls style thing. I know. It's very
That's cute. So nice.
It is nice. How was your week?
Yeah, we should say we are recording this. This is our last episode we're going to record before the election. And
oh God, yeah, I forgot.
Katie and I are both volunteering and doing as much as we can, so I hope that you get out to vote if you're listening to this before Tuesday.
You have and to get out and vote.
I hope that this book, as annoyed as I am with it and the hot tea fiasco, I hope it's like providing a little bit of space away from this stuff. I mean, it's just such a crazy emotional and uncertain time, both like in both of our lives but also just globally. And globally. We got to do it. We got to take like a little bit of time for ourselves. So that's what I'll say about like this past week is what I've been doing is trying to like go outside, go for a walk, not look at Twitter and like just browse the news, like try and, you know, in the morning I usually listen to like NPR to like catch up on the news or listen to the podcast The Daily, and really that sometimes this week I've been like, you know what, I need to listen to something else. Like I need to really like center myself first before I like get overextended with all of the news and get really emotional. Cause like just, I mean, regardless of where you fall in the political spectrum, I think the uncertainty of 2020 is really destabilizing for all of us. In terms of games, because you were talking about games you like.
I love games. Yeah, tell me more.
When I was upstate with friends, we started playing this game called Set, which now I'm obsessed with. This is totally like a grandma game. It's like matching cards.
Uh-huh.
It's really fun. Very old school, but it's a good one.
I also would like someone to come play cribbage with me because Jason refuses.
Yeah, and I refuse. I don't even know what that is, but the name, I will not.
All right. Cribbage? This will happen. I'll be like, Jason, do you want to play a game? And he'll be like, sure. And he'll get a glass of bourbon and sit at the table. And he'll be like, what game are we going to play? And then I'll be like, how about Ticket to Ride? Or how about blah, blah, blah. And he'll be like, okay, good. I thought you were going to say cribbage. And I was just already mad. I'm like, you can't start like that. You can't just like immediately be mad. It's not going to be fun then. But he hates it.
Talk is made by me, Erica Bailey, and Katie Cheney, with production support from Dan White. Our theme music is by Dan White. We'll see you next week.
Yikes. Okay.
There's not enough caffeine in the world for this week. That's how I'm feeling.
Same. I had a double shot latte. It's not enough.